We are back. You are listening to Sexto Sol on 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. That was New Molotov, and we have a wonderful, wonderful special guest on the line this evening. Got a short introduction to him in the first part of the show, but I'm going to go ahead and bring him on because he really doesn't need much introduction from me. I can't do it complete justice. Luis Rodriguez is on the line with us. Luis, are you there with us this evening?
Yes, I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us this evening. I wanted to go ahead and kind of start this interview out to ask you a little bit about your reflections on this current conflict that we have. We've been talking, at least in the major media, about this war on terror and war on gangs and war on poverty and war on drugs and everything else. And you wrote an essay that I read on the show actually a few months ago, or not too long ago, where you related the whole issue of the gangs of New York, the movie that came out, and how we've declared all these wars that have been going on against youth and what that really means in the long run. And I wanted to kind of get your reflections on what you thought about this current conflict that's going on in the Middle East.
Well, I think the most important thing is there's no imagination. There's no poetry. The language that's being used is, you know, one or two syllables, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it's a very simple level, and yet our kids are going to die, families and children and other people are going to die in Iraq. So much death is going to happen, and yet it's not really clear the depthness of why we're there. All it is, you know, just basic, simple things that I don't even sure are true, like, you know, whether these people were actually involved with 9/11, things that people would actually want to go to war for. I think that we have to stop seeing war as an option. It has not worked, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm,
like I
absolutely.
Mentioned in that article, we go to war against gangs, we go to war against drugs, we go to war against poverty, and guess what? In all that time, more poverty, more drugs, and gangs are still existing. So I think there's got to be a whole different approach. A more community-grounded approach, more imagination, more healing. You know, there's got to be other ways to deal with these problems we're having except besides going to war.
What role did the youth play in this kind of a movement? We talk about, because they're always the first ones who end up dying in these wars,
and right.
Who end up getting locked up and who end up being hassled by the police. And we can get into a whole slew of issues, who are miseducated in these schools and everything else. How can the youth be involved in changing the situations that we have today?
Well, I think we have to bring them in and with their ideas, with their wisdom. Some of them have wisdom, with their the energy that they bring, with the fire they bring. We have to incorporate them. The problem is they're mostly abandoned, forgotten, or pushed aside, except as you're saying, when we need them to go to war, then we make sure we have a lot of young people that will risk their lives for very narrow interests. So my thing is, you know what, we need to really incorporate young people. We need to listen to what they have to say. Our schools are, you know, they're just a mess. You know what I mean? There's, no matter what people say, in all the reforms, nothing is taken away from the fact that the schools are completely not doing a job with our kids. Our kids feel alienated, disconnected. They don't have any meaningful or purposeful life. And I think this is what community means, to bring in the young people and the elders and the adults and mentors together as one. And that's where I think we have to put our emphasis.
What is the solution, in your opinion, to changing the way the school systems work? I think that when we start talking about war and we begin to talk about these conflicts and the cycles of violence that we as a society get into, a lot of it is educated from the school system and how people are socialized through that. How can we break that? How can we change these kinds of things, in your opinion?
Well, I think you said the word socialized was, I think it's the right word. It's the word that says that we want to socialize these kids, which is different than we want them to be the people they were meant to be. You know, that we want them to extend their own innate abilities, their own innate gifts that they have the day they're born. They're already born with great attributes, great capacities. And what education should be is to draw those things out, to lead it out, which is really what education, the root of it, comes from. We've forgotten that. We use more instruction, which means to pack it in. You know, we think we have to get kids and pack in knowledge, you know that they really are like empty vessels, and we have to pour in the knowledge in there. We don't realize that they already have a spirit of learning. They already have a great capacities, and we just need to know how to guide it, direct it, give it meaning. And that's what the schools don't do. The schools are just there to make productive citizens out of people or socialize them to either work in industry or do whatever the society seems to think is the right thing to be done. But what you're seeing is a bunch of empty kids, hopeless, rooted, unrooted. They don't feel connected because we're not really dealing with their innate needs, their innate purposes.
You used an excellent analogy a second ago in regard to this issue of looking at them as vessels. And I think, especially here in Texas, we have a problem where there are kids that have to go through this whole standardized testing exercise. And as a result, they end up getting crammed a bunch of information in, but they don't actually ever get any knowledge out of it.
Exactly. That's exactly the good point. You know, the reason why standardized testing is one of the reasons why it doesn't work is because there's no standardized kid. And here we are, the standardized testing. Well, what do you want? We want to homogenize kids. We want to make them. What do we want from them? And a lot of kids can't make it, only not because they're not smart or they can't do it. They just don't fit in. You know what I mean? Some of them are more creative. Some of them are more imaginative. Some of them have other purposes in this world. And we're discounting them, or we're making them dysfunctional, or labeling them as dysfunctional, or, you know, socially behind. And we're not realizing that, in fact, they just have another way to be tapped into. So, no, I don't think standardized testing can be the way the world go, because we just, like I said, we don't have a standardized kid. So how do we have standardized testing as the way to get people supposedly educated?
One of the things I know that you've been active with in the past several months has been this Just Healthcare campaign. Can you tell people a little bit about that and what that means?
Yeah, it's connected with the Labor Party. It's a party that was created to bring together those people who really haven't been able to be cohesive within the Democrats or Republicans. It's got these issues that are vital, such as education, but in particular, it's been focusing on healthcare. And it's a very important issue because, as you know, we have 35 to 40 million people in this country who have no health care, absolutely none. And yet people are dying all the time for the lack of having the proper medical attention. And the way it's set up, unfortunately, is the whole health care industry is exactly that. It's a for-profit industry and will only really, take care of you if you got the means to afford it. And I think we have to have a healthcare system that will take care of you just because you're a human being, you're valuable, and you deserve to be alive. You know what I mean? Instead of just because you have the money. And this is kind of a whole different idea that healthcare should be a right, not just something that if you got the money, you should have it. Everybody should have proper, decent, quality healthcare.
What has been the response of the community, and what has been the response of politicians and elected officials that you've talked to about these issues?
Well, you know, for the most part, it's not a big, sexy issue. You know, more prisons, stop crime, those are sexy issues, you know, go to war. And I think what we have to do is, I think, demand more of our politicians, that they, in fact, reflect the real needs of the community. Healthcare, it may not be a sexy issue, but it's a vital issue. We have thousands of people dying from heart disease, from diabetes, from diseases that we thought were gone a long time ago. And I think that that's where the pressure from the community has to be directed. Get these politicians, get these representatives, get these so-called leaders to really pay attention to our needs. My experience has been that most of them don't really consider this a priority issue, even though their own mothers are dying of cancer. You know what I'm saying? It is an issue. It's an issue that we should pay a lot of attention to, and it's not sexy, but it's definitely vital. It's something that we need to really have now in our communities.
What do you think is the most important issue? This healthcare issue is obviously a critical one because you're right. There are so many people who are struggling with healthcare who don't have any healthcare at all and are dying as a result of your children who are dying as a result of no healthcare. People who are a little bit older, even people who are younger who are dying as a result of health care or lack of it. What do you think is the most crucial issue and the most dangerous one facing the Latino community today?
Well, you know, the Latino community is just, it's a growing community. It's the numbers are so great, and yet we're still behind the eight ball. And I'm sure this is true in Texas, but I know in L.A. here, I happen to be in a community that is about 400,000 people. It's the Northeast San Fernando Valley, and 80% Latino, and there's no bookstores, no movie houses, no culture centers, no art galleries. You know what I'm saying? This is in the entertainment media cap of the world. So I'm sure it must be even worse in communities that aren't even near LA. And I'm thinking, why are we so neglect it. We are, our numbers are great. Our work, the fact that we work in these areas that other people don't work, the fact that we produce and give so much to this community, the fact that some of our sons and daughters are in the war and dying in the war, and yet we're completely neglected. So I think the issue of neglect is a very important one. But as far as how what we can do about it, I think we have to start thinking about our own institutions, our own economic sustainable means, because it's very hard to keep expecting the current economic system to provide for us, because basically that's all we'll be getting is neglect. I think we have to start thinking about our own means of sustaining our communities.
Self-determination.
Exactly, yeah.
What kind of role do you think that's going to play in the next 25 years, especially as a lot of the youth are starting to come into their own consciousness? I think this whole war and all the issues that have arisen as a result of it is hopefully sparking new consciousness in youth. What do you think self-determination and independence community-wise is going to mean to the youth in the next 25 years?
Well, I think the youth are taking somewhat of the lead now. I'm really glad to see that a number of them are at least challenging the war effort. They're challenging some of these so-called political decisions that are being made, these policy decisions. And it's important to challenge. I think that it's time to think and to create thinkers. Our young people have been given the short end of the stick. They're not being educated, but they definitely have the talent. They definitely have the brains. And I'm seeing more and more of them step out. And I think what we got to do as the rest of the community is help prepare them. They need to be the rulers of the community. They need to be the ones running the particular businesses and running the particular governmental bodies and direct the resources and energies to those needs. You know, a lot of government really is how do you direct social energy? And if it's in the hands of a few people who don't really care about poor people or you know, Latinos or African-Americans or anybody, then that energy goes in their pocket. That's how we're seeing a war industry now. It's a war economy. And basically the ones that are going to benefit are the bigger defense industries, you know, and all the related industries. So how do we set it up so that our people are in there and they're saying, no, it should go to our housing, it should go to our health needs, it should go to our school needs, it should go to better our community. And that, I think, means we've got to help prepare these young people, because they got the spirit. And I think the rest of us can come along with them and help prepare them to become these kind of leaders.
Now, in conversations with youth, your name comes up a lot, honestly, in when we talk about people who have inspired others and who have inspired youth with their own stories personally. I've talked to people who have read your writings, who've been extremely inspired by some of the things you've written in your own struggle as well. What do you hope the people take from the things that you have written? What do you hope people learn from your own story and your own struggles as a youth coming up in LA who beat the odds, so to speak, and managed to become something incredibly powerful and someone who's incredibly influential in a lot of ways for a lot of young people?
Well, I think one of the things personal on a personal level is to own one's own life. Growing up, I always seemed to feel that other people were really pulling the strings, that somehow whatever my dreams and interests were, they weren't the interests of the greater community. I remember going in high school and I wanted to take some academic classes, and they were saying, no, college isn't for you. You remember those days where people actually say, don't go to college. You work better with your hands. And I was always, the limitations were constantly being imposed on me. And I think I finally got the idea that, you know what, I have to own my own life. I have to find my own path. I have to find the way that I can best express my own meaning in this world. And I think this is what we got to help our young people understand and help them to achieve, that we can have communities that can hold the ground for them, that can provide them resources, provide them guidance, but in effect, we want them to be those full, complete human beings that they should be. And this is what I think is where we're at now. How do we create that for our children so that they are, in fact, vital human beings instead of kind of like these fractured, confused, uncertain human beings that we seem to have in this world who will go along with war because they just want some certainty, and instead of thinking through and challenging some of these reasons why we would even go to war.
What do you feel is going to be the means to really do that? What do you feel is going to be the way that we're going to go ahead and break that cycle?
Well, there's probably a lot of ways, but I think one of the most vital, important ways to do it is to bring our adults and young people together again, to really bring real dynamic mentoring into the lives of young people, you know, to get elders again to be active in the lives of young people. We have our elderly sitting in nursing homes or pushed away in from somebody's house and forgotten, and we have our young people pushed out of schools and pretty much neglected and forgotten, and this is why our communities are falling down. I think we have to have everybody come together again to realize that we have a shared future. We have shared interests. We have shared concerns. How do we begin to have some shared solutions and bring in young people, bring the mentors, bring the adults, bring the elders all in one space and say, how will we resolve these issues? I really do believe in the abundance of our souls and the abundance of our thinking and the abundance of our land and the abundance of our labor. And I think we have to build on that assumption versus one of scarcity, you know, where we don't have enough, where everybody's got to fight and really step over each other just to get the little bit that's left over, and we end up not cooperating. We end up just competing with each other and therefore not getting anywhere.
Indeed. It's very, very true. What do you recommend, though, to an adult who is, or even somebody who's a little bit older, that maybe a bit of an older adult who can influence a child as well? I deal with youth as well who have families who are also struggling with issues too.
Right.
How can you, what would you recommend to an adult who is struggling with their own issues but at the same time wants to be a positive influence in the life of a youth?
Well, you know, I found that if you, to say you mentor one person, one young person, that relationship actually fulfills something in you as an adult. There's something that's missing and gets filled when you start really helping, guiding, and supporting a young person into the life that they should be living. And having done this now, I realize, you know, I couldn't have done this by myself. I couldn't have found my way just by concentrating on where my needs are. When I started trying to be a good father, number one, and then also trying to help and mentor other young people, I found some fulfillment. I found some real purpose. And it isn't, you know, it doesn't really take that much if you think of every adult just mentioning one person. You know what I'm saying? What a community we would have. What a big change that would be. A lot of these issues that we're looking at would just be no longer there. There would be so much just beauty and attention and so much people cooperating. To me, that's what we're missing, the respect that we need to have for each other. So I think that if just one person just took it upon themselves to find a lost young man or woman who really could use some help and just take the patience and the time to be with them and to show them something, teach them something, to impart some knowledge, that's just a powerful thing in itself. It really gives even the adult a sense that they have a place in this world.
Something you said a few minutes ago has been sticking with me ever since we've had this conversation, but the thing that you mentioned about being told about what kind of job would be best for you because you're good with your hands or whatever else, I think a lot of people get. I've spoken with an individual who is out in your area you might be familiar with, Jesus Trevino, who wrote a book recently on his experiences with the Movimiento. And one of the things that he said was that he grew up believing a lot of these things, that Latinos were inferior or that these jobs that they particularly had were because that was the way it was supposed to be. And it wasn't until he became more conscious and he became exposed to new ideas where he began to realize that there is a system of power in place that keeps those things the way that they are and doesn't really allow for many deviations to that. In what ways did political consciousness open your mind, and what ways did those ideas open you up to the experiences that you have now or have had now?
Well, I think it was very important in my life because I grew up in the period of Chicano movement, same as, you know, Jesus, in the same area. And I had realized that I didn't know much of anything. You know, my whole involvement in the barrio, in the streets, that was my whole world. I thought that was it. I didn't see anything beyond my own neighborhood. And especially in the gang life, then I had a very clear idea of who my enemies were. And in fact, they weren't my enemies. You know what I mean? They were my own people. They were families. And I needed that political clarity just to open up my eyes to see the world is bigger than this. There's so many more motive forces involved. There's so many issues that I needed to understand. And it helped me begin to see what my place is in this world because before I thought I knew my place, but it really wasn't. And I would have ended up either dead or in prison or a heroin addict like everybody else around me. Or I needed to take a hold of my life and say, you know what, there's a bigger fight for us. There's a bigger place to be. And that's what politics did. It gave me some coherency and some clarity. And that's, I think that's where we're all at. How do we get clarity now with all these issues and all these questions and all these confusions? And how do we get some coherency within ourselves but also within our communities? That's where I think we have to start talking about trying to achieve, because everything else is superficial if we don't try to achieve those things.
True, very, very true. What ideas and efforts are really inspiring you on a personal level these days? There are so many different movements and ideas and things that are just growing out of our communities and all around the world. What things are really giving you hope that there's going to be a much brighter future?
Well, you know, and over the last 30 years, and I'm sure that you and many of your listeners have lived through this, we saw so many things happen. And one of the, I think, important changes is how rapidly people are coming together. The peace, I don't want to call them just anti-war, I think their peace efforts are vast. There's millions of people around the world. In many ways, the internet and the technology we have has allowed us to be more able to move quickly. And it's not just white people or it's not just black people. It's all kind of people coming together. Somehow that shared commonality of interest that we have is beginning to really be felt. And I've seen that as a hopeful development. I know it doesn't seem hopeful when the United States as a government is willing to go to war in spite of what the rest of the world is thinking. And it doesn't seem hopeful when, you know, so many people are going to die and the major corporations are going to take advantage of it and they're the ones that are going to benefit. But I see the hope in the fact that people are not taking them on. It's forcing other governments in the world to challenge that empire that's rising out of this country's government, you know what I'm saying? And I think it's the fact that people went to the streets, but also they're being more imaginative. It isn't just protests. It's poetry and it's song and it's art, and it's just so much expression coming out. So I'm hopeful that this is happening, because I remember 30 years ago the struggle was there, but we were very fractured, you know. Blacks fought one battle, and then Native Americans on another side, and then Chicanos on one end, and whites on the other, and it was very hard to come together, and I think now it's coming naturally, our coming togetherness is just happening just so quickly.
It has been definitely, it's been very impressive to me to see so many of these different people from all these different backgrounds be able to unite around some very common themes over the last year or so. We've seen so many different things that have happened, unfortunately, with the September 11th issue, as well as just the buildup towards this war. It's been nice, in a way, for lack of a better word, it's been nice to see that so many people have been willing to step up. What do you think has changed for you personally since September 11th? Has anything for you, either personally or maybe the way that you looked at the world before? The major media talks so much about how everything changed, so to speak, after September 11th. In a lot of ways, a lot of the community issues never went away, but is there anything on a personal level for you that was affected?
Well, I woke up to a different world after September 11th. But I also woke up to my own power and my own strength as a poet, you know, my own ability to be able to speak and address audiences and write. What I did after September 11th is I went on those planes, even though everybody was trying to back off, and I traveled and I spoke all over the country, and I continue to do that. And I continue to write because I knew that what this time required was for me to go to my own particular gifts and off them tell my own truth and the truth of our communities and the truth of our times. That's really what's challenging me. I've been through a lot, but I know I'm very fortunate, you know, and I know that I have a responsibility, having been fortunate, to give back and to help provide as much understanding and awareness as I can. And this is what I see my task now during this kind of hard, dark times that we're in, is to provide some light, to provide some understanding, and to see how much I can contribute through my words and my art to bring us together as a community and to bring us together as the way we should be as people, as human beings.
What has been the most inspiring thing that someone who has told you at a speaking engagement or poetry reading? Over the years, I'm sure you've run into many, many people who say they've been influenced by the things that you've written. Is there something that sticks out in your mind as something that really touched you?
Well, I guess part of the most meaningful ones is when the young kids come up to me with tears in their eyes to say that your book saved my life. And I don't know what to do with something like that, because I can't imagine how powerful that can be. But then on the other hand, I can't imagine it. I know what that is. I know how when I was young, certain books saved my life. And I know how when somebody said something at a certain point, that's what I needed to hear to give me a sense of something bigger than what than I ever thought I had. And when I listen to these young people, it brings me to a lot of emotion, because it makes me think about how lost I was and how I wish somebody could have stopped me, or somebody could have saved me, or somebody could have given me something. And eventually it worked, but man, for a long time, I was lost too. And I hurt a lot of people, and I hurt myself and my family before I finally could get it together. So that inspires me, that some guy like me out of nowhere, you know, who probably didn't think much of himself as a kid, now is impacting people around him in a very positive, meaningful way. And I hope that really the lesson is that others can do it too, that we need more people to get out there, to write, to speak, to touch people in that manner that really is powerful, because there's just not enough things doing it. With all the TV, all the movies, everything's coming at us, like I said, most of it's superficial, and hardly anything gets to the depth of our being. And I hope that I have been able to do that to some people.
We could, this is an interesting question. We could certainly spend a whole show on it, but for someone who's listening to this show, who has read your books, who has read your writing, but who's never really written, is there a way that you can suggest for them to open that process up for themselves? Is there a technique maybe that you use that maybe they could try, or are there ideas and ways that you can recommend that they try to tell their own stories through poetry or through writing to open up new worlds?
Well, I think it's much as possible just to do it. Writing is like anything else. You have to do it. Even if you go to workshops or classes, if you're not writing, they don't do any good. You have to just write. And you have to be as vivid and as detailed as you can about your writing. You have to try to get deeper than even you think you can possibly go. Like I tell somebody, somebody asked me once, how do I know if a poem I've written is any good? And I go, well, when it scares the heck out of me, you know, when I've written something so deep and so even laden with emotion and even hurt that I'm really scared about what I'm writing, then I know that's where I'm going. That's where I have to go. Always Running, for example, my book was written like that. There was so much I was afraid to talk about, but I just knew I had to open up and just explore these things that I didn't want to deal with for many, many years. And I'm glad I did, because there's a personal healing there. There's a healing in my family because of it. There's healings in our community because of this work. So I think that's what I would say to people. Just write. Let yourself go. And don't hold back. Tell your story. Everybody has a powerful story. Everybody. I know some people think, oh, I've never been through anything. But if you sit down and write, I'm sure you'll find your own particular story. That's what we need more out there, more of our stories.
Indeed. I think that was one thing that Jesus Trevino mentioned as well. One of the reasons that he became involved and one of the reasons that he began to write was he felt like there weren't enough of our people telling our stories. You can turn on CNN and see all kinds of things. You can turn on movies and all these other types of things, and you can see everybody else's stories, but not very many people were telling our stories.
Right. And in fact, that's a good thing you mentioned that, because I do think that besides the preparation for leadership and politics, we need to prepare ourselves to be controlling or in charge or running some of this media. You know what I'm saying? What you're doing is important, because we need those kind of people involved in all media. And we need people to make those movies. We need 20, 30 Jesus Trevinos, you know what I mean? And we have so many stories. We need so much more out there. And yet we're not prepared for that either. So we got to help our young people, prepare them to actually do the movies, do the TV shows, do the radio shows, and put these things out there.
And it's definitely a shout to those of you who have skills out there who are listening to this. Definitely, it's a good chance to mentor a youth, teach them your skills, let them learn and let them grow with your own experiences and help empower them, because we do need to be training and inspiring the next generation of leaders.
Right, exactly.
What projects are you working on currently, things that you want to go ahead and share with listeners, maybe books or items that you want folks to keep an eye out for?
Well, one is I have a novel that I'm working on, and I hope that it'll be done by 2004. I have another poetry collection called My Nature's Hunger that Curbstone Press out of Connecticut will be publishing also in 2004. I have a CD that just came out. It's called My Name's Not Rodriguez at Dos Manos Records. And on my website, which is luisjrodriguez.com, there's more information on that. But one of the most important projects that I'm really proud to be involved with is we opened up a bookstore, cafe, art gallery, and performance space here in the northeast San Fernando Valley, part of LA. It's called Tia Chucha's Café Cultural. And it's become, and again, one of the ways that I give back, it's become a vital gathering center for the community. We have music, we have poetry, we have all the arts. We have open mics, we have author signings, we have art receptions, just so many wonderful things happening. And it's got our culture. It's got the indigenous our background from our people, as well as the rich colors and the rich flavors of who we are. So I'm really proud of this particular project because it's been embraced by the community. And we also have a website for that. That's tiachucha.com, TIACHUCHA.com, for anybody that's interested in what we're doing out here.
Could you give your website one more time? I'm sure there are people who are grabbing pins right now.
Yeah, the first one is luisjrodriguez.com, and there's no dots or hyphens or anything. It's just luisjrodriguez.com. And that also has my upcoming events around the country, if anybody wants to find out where I'm going to be at, and a whole mess of history and bios and books and everything. And then the other website is tiachucha.com, TIACHUCHA.com. That is our cafe bookstore that we've created, which I hope becomes an example for how we can create our own institutions, begin to bring in some new value systems of cooperation and art and culture into our communities, and hopefully others can emulate, because I think we need more of these kind of places.
Absolutely, absolutely. Any other things that you want to share with folks before we wrap things up?
Well, no, it's always good to talk to as many people as possible, and I really appreciate you letting me to say a few words, and I hope someday I'll get back out there and visit with more folks.
I hope so, too. I generally hope so. You're definitely one of those voices that we need many, many more of.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. And you have been listening to Sexto Sol. We're actually going to be taking a very quick break. We have been speaking tonight with Luis J. Rodriguez, who is the author of many, many books, best known book being Always Running, La Vida Loca, Gang Days in L.A. We've been talking about a lot of different things, from youth empowerment to different political issues that are going on. Luis, thank you very much for your time. I genuinely appreciate you sticking around with us this late hour.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Thank you. And we'll be back. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.